Coming up on Tech News Today, Windows Phone 8 gets real, a hurricane unites the internet, and will garage sales become illegal? All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, October 29th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate with colleagues and clients from anywhere. You can share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even from an iPad. Sign up for your free 30-day trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use promo code TNT. And by American Express Bank FSB, offering a high-yield savings account, the perfect complement to help you reach your savings goals. To learn more and open an account online, visit personalsavings.com/online savings, member FDIC. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphones. Find out what your gadget is worth and get cash to upgrade to the latest iPhone at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zachter.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And we've got Alex Gumpel along board. He's going to talk to us about Windows Phone 8. But let's start off with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feeds. Microsoft held a Windows Phone 8 announcement in San Francisco, unveiling leaked features like Rooms, Kids Corner, and Data Sense. Data Sense helps you limit data's use and keeps you from going over your limit. Several release dates for multiple phones were announced, starting on sale this weekend, November 3rd, and running throughout November.
Hurricane Sandy's begun to batter the East Coast. Luckily, companies are using the internet to help out. For example, Google has set up a crisis map for people on the East Coast preparing for the storm. It includes weather service alerts, notifications of evacuation areas, that sort of thing. The Red Cross has a family connection page set up. The Weather Channel is streaming live coverage on YouTube. The New York Times has temporarily waived its paywall, to name a few resources that have cropped up so far.
In more weather-related news, Hurricane Sandy has delayed a number of events on the East Coast. Google's New York Android event is canceled because the venue where Google was to do the event is in an evacuation zone. All Things D's Dive into Mobile conference is also delayed. Facebook's Manhattan Gift event is also delayed. All of those events were to start today and will be rescheduled.
Carbon nanotubes. Yeah, you love them. They're the one hope for smaller and faster computer chips. And IBM announced a breakthrough in getting enough nanotubes together to have a party and be useful in commercial chips. The new approach uses ion exchange chemistry that allows controlled placement of nanotubes at two orders of magnitude greater than before, with a density of roughly 1 billion per square centimeter. This is still lab technology, but a significant step forward.
Apple has sold out of its launch inventory of all models of the iPad mini, with Wi-Fi-only models pushed back at least 2 weeks, LTE models shipping sometime after that. If you're one of the pre-orderers, though, Amazon thinks you're nuts. The company's running a big ad on its front page saying that the Kindle Fire HD offers much more for much less. Calls out the Mini for having a lower resolution display than the Fire HD, one measly mono speaker, and all for $329. Happy cutthroat holiday season, everybody.
Did Apple not allow Amazon to sell the Mini? Because they sell the other iPad.
They will eventually.
Yeah.
It'll be a while. Good news if you're a Samsung Galaxy S3 owner on the Sprint network. You guys are getting Jelly Bean as an over-the-air update right now. Enjoy your Project Butter and Google Now, Sprint fans. The other U.S. carriers, yeah, they haven't announced when their S3s will be updated.
Time for some news about the Oak Ridge boys at Oak Ridge National Laboratory, or ORNL. Titan launched today. The supercomputer successor to Jaguar can run more than 20,000 trillion calculations a second. That's 20 petaflops, using thousands of NVIDIA GPUs. According to the Oak Ridge National Laboratory, the computing capacity would be like each of the world's 7 billion people carrying out 3 million calculations per second, but much cheaper.
Remember Paul Seglia, the man who claimed he rightfully owned half of Facebook? because in 2003, Mark Zuckerberg did some programming work for him and somehow they came to a 50-50 agreement of the social network. Well, he's been arrested and charged with doctoring, fabricating, and destroying evidence to support his claim. Seglia is accused of producing a contract with a fake page, faking emails confirming the deal with Zuckerberg, and that an actual contract found on one of Seglia's hard drives didn't even reference the company at all.
Kind of knew that was coming, right? I mean, seriously. Do you want to sell that used phone or computer? No, this isn't an ad. You better check where it was constructed first, because if the U.S. Supreme Court rules in favor of John Wiley and Sons against Supap Kyrgyzstan today, it could become illegal in the U.S. to resell things manufactured outside of the U.S. The first sale doctrine allows you to resell used items, but this case attempts to squash that right regarding imported goods. The case pertains to gray market importation of textbooks, but a broad opinion could have other repercussions, especially for businesses like eBay and Amazon.
Well, you can now purchase light bulbs at Apple stores. That's right. The Philips Hue system is a set of three LED light bulbs and a device that connects to your router so you can control your lights from an app. The Hue system allows you to set light profiles and even copy a color from a photo. It's not cheap. The starter pack costs $200 and is available exclusively at Apple stores.
Wow, exclusively?
Right now, yes.
That's crazy. That's where I go to get all my light bulbs, because I like to pay a lot for light bulbs. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Citrix and GoToMeeting. Meetings are essential to the way we work. It's easy to do a meeting when you're face-to-face, but it's hard to get everybody in the same room. Well, don't worry about it. Have the meeting face-to-face with your team. And do it over GoToMeeting. You can share the same screen, see each other face-to-face, HD video conferencing, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today and find out the difference. If your team is spread out in different locations, coming together is easy with HD Faces, the powerfully simply way to meet and collaborate online. We've used it for a lot of meetings here at TWIT, and it really does make a difference. I've met with the same people both on the phone, where you're just kind of having to imagine what they're thinking, what they're saying, what they look like, and with GoToMeeting with HD Faces, it's so much easier to communicate with somebody when you can see them. You wouldn't think so. You'd think, oh well, what's the big deal? But when you can see their expressions, you can see that they're understanding what you're saying. You get that nonverbal communications. It's great. So no matter where everyone is located, GoToMeeting allows you to share the same screen, making it easier to be on the same page. And with built-in HD video conferencing, you get to see each other face-to-face. But you want to take my word for it. Try GoToMeeting for free for 30 days. For this special offer, visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code TNT. Remember, use that promo code TNT. GoToMeeting. Meeting is believing. All right, joining us now, Nate Langson, editor of Wired.co.uk. How's it going, Nate?
Uh-oh.
I can't hear you.
Might be a little muted.
It's taking a long time for your voice to get across the pond from the UK, apparently. But it's good to see you in any case.
And we'll work on it.
We'll figure that out in a second. But let's get to the Windows Phone 8 announcement. So Windows Phone 8 had its launch announcement today. Joe Belfiore was on stage. We did not really learn a whole lot other than launch dates. Just real quickly, they talked about resizing live tiles. We already knew that from the developer announcement. They talked about live apps integrating into Wallet, integrating into other apps, integrating into the lock screen, giving you some customizable info that you can surface even when the screen is locked. They touted a lot of the apps, 120,000 apps. A new Pandora with 1 year ad-free was very cool. New Facebook, new Twitter, new Skype. Skype will run in the background now in Windows Phone 8. And they claim they'll have 46 of the top 50 apps from other platforms available in Windows. So trying to combat that perception that Windows Phone doesn't have all the apps. Windows Phone 8 SDK will be publicly available for everyone tomorrow. The big announcements were DataSense, which compresses every web page, tries to help you save data, but also will warn you when you get close to your data cap. Kids Corner, where you can authorize certain apps to be used by the kids in a separate interface. Rooms, which is an improvement on groups. You can have lists of people, kind of like circles. Voice to text with OneNote. Xbox Music, as we expected, coming to Windows Phone 8. They'll have sync companions for not only Windows 8 and Windows 7, but also the Mac, so you can move your iTunes over to Xbox Music. That's pretty interesting. And they talked about all of the big products that they're going to have that will run Windows Phone 8, Lumia 920, Samsung Ativ S, the HTC 8X and 8S. They will start on sale this weekend, November 3rd, some of the models, and they'll roll out throughout the rest of November. T-Mobile will carry The 8S and the 8X, those are expected out November 14th. AT&T and Verizon will also carry models, various models coming out this month. All of the models will be available in the Microsoft stores that are around during the holiday season. Alex, you spent a lot of time prepping for this. What did you think of what was announced?
It was all expected. This is most of the stuff wasn't anything new if you've been following the leaks that have come out or the developers' summit announcements. There's a couple just updates to things, but nothing really major. I'd say that the iTunes syncing is kind of the biggest thing, since a lot of people have their music library in iTunes and they don't have to now maintain a separate library in Zune like they could, that they had to do with 7. So that's kind of big, I think. Pandora, if you're a Pandora customer already, having that on the phone is nice.
When you're ad-free, that's
when you're ad-free, right? Yeah. Although that it basically is the same. They offer the same service with Xbox Music, but if you already are a Pandora customer and you don't want to move over, you have a choice. So that's nice.
Are you excited? You're a Windows Phone user.
I'm excited.
I
hope I can get one soon. Not due for an upgrade for a while, so I'll have to see how I can afford that. But
plasma.
I'm on Verizon, and there's I guess there's a new Samsung OTI phone that hasn't been announced. So I'm curious if that's going to be anything nice. I'm bummed that the 920 is not on Verizon because that's the one I wanted. But the 8X is very nice, and look forward to playing with that.
And there's also an 800 Lumia phone that's coming to Verizon, right. but that's mid-range.
The 820 line and also the HTC 8S, those are the lower-end ones.
We were struggling to pay attention, it seemed like. I'm not saying meaning you. I mean all of us.
We all were.
It was a long announcement. It seemed a little light on substance. What did you make of it?
Well, it was almost an hour and a half or hour and 15 minutes presentation, and there was about maybe two or three new things. But in all fairness, a lot of this stuff was like scrounged off of SDKs and things. So not exactly something Microsoft was touting very much. To see all these features that are going to be official, it's nice to see this because, again, Windows Phone doesn't have a huge market share anyway. So to a lot of people, if you're not paying attention, those leaks and things weren't exactly front page news. But this has to be, because this is effectively an introduction to Windows Phone 8 to a large amount of people, because they weren't following these news things. But I mean, it definitely seems like Microsoft's got their big branding thing ready. It's all about you, Tom. In fact, the ad actually mentions you, Tom, because they said
actually
Tom,
did mention Tom.
I'm not even making that up. Not Tom Merritt, but the name Tom. The idea that this is your phone. This is their new push. I'd assume that with the phones being in all the Microsoft stores and having that same tiled interface everywhere, it's going to get a lot easier for people to understand what's going on. But this is the big introduction. This hour and a half of it, not exactly
hour and 15. Hour and 15.
Excuse me. It felt like about a couple of days. By the end, it was just like, could you please just tell us? You could have probably done all this in a bullet point presentation or PowerPoint in under 5 minutes.
Or they could have done what Google is doing, canceled their event. Not on their own choice because of the hurricane, but then just release all the info anyway.
Something that I was talking to Mary Jo about last night is that something that what I thought and she thinks too is that Windows Phone 8 is what they wanted to do all along and have the same core as Windows 8 and have the kind of the cross pollination between the two. And Windows Phone 7 was just because the pieces weren't ready to do that. The core wasn't ready to start building on that, so they had to do something to get something out. And so Windows Phone 7 was the solution to that. And it was kind of, in a way, almost like a beta test of that UI and that style of thing. And now it's becoming mainstream across all of Microsoft.
I think we could spend a lot of time critiquing the wisdom of the presentation and the presentation skills and the presentation construction. But in the end, yeah, we're on inside the Beltway. We're going to be more critical of that stuff. And we saw a lot of this stuff leaked out already. This is a good announcement for Microsoft, though. All in all, the person who isn't following this closely every single second and who reads the story tomorrow that says this is what's in new Windows phones and they're coming starting this weekend is going to be attracted to this phone operating system. And I think even more so because of the launch of Windows 8, because they're seeing all those ads for Windows 8. And if they've upgraded to Windows 8 on their own own home computer, they're going to recognize tiles. They're going to be familiar with how they work. And they may even know some people who have a Microsoft Surface or another Windows 8 or Windows RT tablet. So all of a sudden, Windows Phone makes a lot more sense than it did when it was sort of that weird phone in the corner in the AT&T or Verizon store that not even any of the sales reps really understood. This is the, as you mentioned, Mary Jo said, this is the real launch of Windows Phone, it seems like.
Windows Phone 7, a bit of a stopgap. Burned a bunch of people, but...
But it was like, what, 3% market share? So the, what, the, like the 100 people?
Yeah, the folks who were like, you know, avid fans of Microsoft went to that, and I think they'll be able to come back to this. This is the phone for the masses. Well, even though it's for you specifically, this is the one they want everybody to have in their hands because it's going to
feel... For each of you.
For each and every one of
in
you.
In the masses.
In the It's not the iPhone, so it's the U phone.
A curious thing that they didn't talk about that I was expecting them to was Windows Phone 7.8. So the update to Windows Phone 7 that gives you the new stack.
Oh yeah, I'm not
stuff.
Surprised they didn't talk about that
at all.
They're not gonna want to muddle the message, and they don't want to call attention to the fact that all the Windows Phone 7 users are stuck.
Good point.
They made their play with that in the summer and said, "Hey, you're getting almost everything that you're getting," and so now it's like. We're not going to talk about the fact that you're not getting any of this stuff
because we still don't know anything really about that and when that's going to come around for Windows Phone 7 or anything. But yeah,
let's move on and talk about some of the stuff that's going on with the major hurricane that's headed toward the East Coast. Depending on when you're listening to this, it may have already hit landfall. What is amazing to me, and I was talking about this before the show, back when I started working at ZDTV in 1999, one of the first web pages that I had to create was a list of hurricane disaster tips. Because there was a hurricane hitting Florida at the time. I think it was Andrew, maybe. And so we were putting together things about, you know, putting hard drives into Tupperware and things like that for backing up. Because there wasn't a lot of cloud backup situation back there. These days, you've got a lot more options to keep your data safe, keep your technology safe. Of course, keep yourself safe first and foremost. And so I was thinking, well, should we do some sort of segment about that again on Tech News Today? We don't need to. There's so many people doing it out there on the web. In fact, go to bit.ly/hurricanehackers-gdoc. You likely won't be able to get into the doc and edit it. It is an editable doc for people who want to figure out ways to deal with the hurricane. And it goes all over the place. There's projects brainstorming there, including sandbag.it. which is a map of places that need sandbagging and a way for people to sign up to help. There's after Sandy benefit parties that are being planned. Crash pads, matching people with spare rooms for afterwards. All kinds of surge reports, flooding reports. This is the most comprehensive collection of resources for tracking the storm. Sandy Streams maps are embedded. They're working on a way to take all of the different live streams of Sandy and put them on one map at sandystreamsmap.tirl.org. Just an incredible overview of what's going on. Do you guys remember during Hurricane Katrina when you had the one guy live blogging from New Orleans in the middle of it? I remember just constantly refreshing him. It's amazing how much farther we've come and we're hitting an area that is denser with geeks, I feel like.
Well, not only that, but I mean, you use Katrina as an example. It's not as if Katrina was a big surprise, but I think that that was a great lesson in, hey, things weren't put into place ahead of time well enough. If we had just been a little bit more dialed in and communicating with each other about what we know, who might be unsafe, and how to collect all of that information online that could be accessible by more people, we might have had, less of a catastrophe. So especially what we know of Sandy, this whole thing looks really bad. So the more information that we can pull together, whether you're on the East Coast now or, you know, like we are on the West Coast and pretty far removed from all of this, the better for everybody.
There's a hashtag on Twitter that goes along with this Google Doc that I'm talking about, Hurricane Hackers. If you do the hashtag Hurricane Hackers on Twitter, you can follow a lot of people who are communicating as they work on these different projects. And as we mentioned in the news fuse, Google has an amazing crisis map up, google.org/crisis-map/sandy-2012, if you want to track a lot of different things that are going on related to the hurricane. New York Times and Wall Street Journal have dumped their paywall. I know the Weather Channel is doing a live stream on YouTube that is commercial free. So it is not the first internet connected crisis or disaster that we've been through, but it does seem like the one that we're most prepared for and using the internet to the best advantage we have yet.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of the social tools and collaborative tools are just coming together for this kind of I don't want to say event, but this is the kind of thing that's causing everybody.
It's not a planned celebration. It is an event,
right? This is happening. The tools are mature enough that you could have a hashtag that's going to be usable. Because I mean, years ago, you try to go to Twitter, and if there's some major event happening, it could take Twitter down. And I think in today's world, we don't have that certain that kind of same issue. So you'll have this constant stream of data coming every which way, and all of it being on that collaborative end on like the Google Maps with the overlays, like all of these things that make it a lot easier to understand what's going on, especially if you got relatives out in the East Coast, like I do. I'm like, okay, where is this going on? I kept zooming into the map, and like it's missing part of Queens right now. I'm like, oh, good.
And are you keeping in touch with them over the internet?
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm using text messages right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, but I'm keeping in touch with
everybody. Smartphone?
Yeah. Smartphone. Actually, I'm using Google Voice to do everything, so it's
there you go.
Over the web.
Even better. Yeah. Interesting. Nate, I mean, you're not going to get touched by this, as neither are we out in California. What's your perspective on it?
Well, you'd be surprised. I mean, the front page of the BBC News website right now is covering the hurricane. So, you know, this is still something that a lot of, you know, British readers are still keeping their eye on extremely closely. And of course, I mean, I've got friends who are over in the East Coast right now as well. There's a post on my Facebook wall this morning from someone who just said stranded in New York, you know, and so, you know, we're keeping our eyes on it for, you know, a lot of the similar reasons. But what I wanted to say about this, you know, this Google Doc in particular is that, you know, I think that it's still quite a niche thing. You know, not the average person in the street might not necessarily know to go to this this Google Doc and find this information. But I think what's quite useful is that to major broadcasters and to, you know, newscasters and people at, you know, massive media, this can be extremely helpful to those people as well. And it helps the information that, you know, these amazing people are collating for this sort of document. It gives them a mainstream outlet that, you know, I think ultimately helps people who otherwise wouldn't necessarily get the same information.
Yeah, and it will be interesting to see how it all plays out. We don't know what's going to happen when the hurricane makes landfall in the New York area, in the New Jersey area. There's cold weather coming down from the north, which could turn it into a really horrible superstorm. They're expecting surge flooding. It's actually not the worst hurricane we've seen hit in the United States. It's just there are so many unknowns about the impact that it could have and the high population of the area that it's hitting that are causing all the concern. But I have to say, I'm fairly impressed with how well people are preparing in advance, how seriously they're taking the warnings. Hopefully it's not one of those situations where the storm ends up not being as bad as we expected, which would be a good thing, and people decide, oh, that means I don't have to worry in the future. It's always good to be over-prepared, in my estimation. But if you're listening to this before, during, or after the storm hits and you're out on the East Coast, hope you made it through safe, and hope everyone you know and love makes it through safe as well. Let's move on to the Supreme Court. They're sheltered inside, away from the rain, ruling on the first sale doctrine. Sarah, what's going on with that?
Okay, so this is a very interesting story, and it's actually potentially going to have widespread implications for an entire industry of reselling things anywhere between, you know, anything between books to electronics to the way that libraries work. The deal is that a book publisher, textbook publisher called John Wiley & Sons is suing an individual, Supap Kurtsang. He's a student entrepreneur who basically made a business for himself importing textbooks from abroad into the U.S., and reselling them. Now, the deal is that he is originally of Thai descent. He's from Thailand, but went to college at two different universities in the U.S. Turns out that many textbooks are cheaper overseas, not just in Thailand. For example, there's a great Ars Technica article that really breaks down this entire case that says a biochemistry textbook, popular textbook, is $146 on Amazon site, the U.S. version. And it's $63 on the UK site. That's just sort of the way some of these things go. Sometimes textbooks, we're talking about physical textbooks here, can have, I don't know, paperback versions rather than the hardcover. The front of the book can look a little bit different. Maybe the paper is of poorer quality. There are all sorts of reasons that textbooks might be cheaper overseas. Now, the reason that John Wiley & Sons has such an issue with this guy selling textbooks is that they say, wait a second, we've got certain pricing schemes that that we need to keep in place, right? There are reasons that it's more expensive to sell a textbook in the U.S. or to buy that same textbook than it might be overseas. This guy can't just import those textbooks and then resell them at a lesser price because that just changes the dynamics of everything. Now, Tom, you mentioned for sale. The idea behind for sale is this is a rule that allows anybody who has bought a book or a DVD or anything, if I am the owner of something, can resell it.
Yeah.
Yes, a chair, anything. I can resell it. I can lend it. I can give it away, even if it's copyrighted, without interference, because I bought it, so I own it. So, you know, along with fair use, this is a very important limitation placed on copyright. If there wasn't a first sale doctrine in place, content companies basically control the sales of their goods forever, right? If I don't truly own what I've bought, then they can tell me what I can and cannot do once I've bought it. Now, the whole reason that a lot of this has become a real issue is, let's go back to the 1990s. You've got the Amazons, you've got a variety of companies that allowed us all, for the first time in many cases, to realize, wait a second, so something I buy in the U.S. might be the exact same thing overseas. Maybe it's of cheaper quality, but as far as the information goes, it's the same thing. And I'd have to pay less if I was just over there. Now, you put textbooks, which of course is what this case is about specifically, and students together, you're probably not going to find a lot of students who say, well, you know, I want the best biochemistry book I could possibly buy. I don't want that chintzy version of the same book. You know, you just want the information. You're a student. You're trying to save money, which is why Kurtzing had a nice little business going. So it's like, okay, well, what do we do now? On Kurtzing's side, you've got companies like eBay. You've got game and music retailers, the kind of retailers that make profit off of reselling games and music and books, that sort of stuff. A company like Goodwill. Even libraries are concerned. Well, wait a second. If we end up stocking our shelves with a book that was bought overseas, is that going to be a hindrance on our model as well if the book is not supposed to be back in the U.S.? On the other side of it, you've got the movie and music industries, you've got software companies, other book publishers. They're on the sides of John Wiley and Son saying, we've got differential pricing schemes. This is how we make our money. This should be enforced by the U.S. courts. And the reason that this is kind of scary, I guess, for Kurtzing is that he's already lost. Wiley & Sons sued him in 2008. His lawyer was unable to get the case thrown out on first sale grounds, which is what they argued. A jury found him guilty of infringing copyrights in at least 8 of the books that he'd sold. He was ordered to pay quite a bit of money, $600,000 in damages, which turns out to be about $75,000 per book. He appealed. A panel of judges ruled 2-1 in the publisher's favor. So we're back at this again, and it really has a lot to do with if the first sale doctrine should be enforced on goods that are made and then sold abroad versus goods in the U.S.
The first sale precedent applies specifically right now to things made in the United States. If I buy a book that was produced in the United States, made in the United States, sold in the United States, I have the right to resell that book. I don't have to get anybody's permission. What is causing this is the so-called gray market, right? So this is textbooks, but it also applies to TVs. In fact, with a Costco case, it applied to watches, where a watch company was selling their watches at a very nice premium here in the United States because they're a premium brand and they spend a lot of money on marketing as a premium brand in the United States. And Costco was selling those same watches for much cheaper because they were buying them overseas at a much reduced price in a market where the prices were lower. Now, the argument there is Costco's benefiting from all of this cost of marketing that we do and all of this importations setup that we have that creates a demand. And then they actually are buying at a discount and sell and underselling us and cutting us off at the knees. And the courts in that case agreed. They said, "Yeah, you Costco are not allowed to do that." And so the watches were removed. Now, the copyright part of that case was thrown out. What the watch company had tried to do was put a little logo on the back of the watch and claim copyright. The court said, "Well, that's not a copyright infringement." So what's happening here is they're saying we don't want to outlaw garage sales. We don't want to stop libraries from lending books. What we want to stop is someone undermining our business by going around our pricing scheme. We sell at a lower price in certain areas because they'll tolerate cheaper versions of the books. It's a different marketplace. Prices are set locally. And if someone is going around those schemes and undercutting us, then they're benefiting from all of our work and all of our marketing, but they're not incurring any of the cost of that.
Well, this case is going up to the Supreme Court at this point, right? This is the Kurtzing case.
Yep.
I was looking at this and thinking about how would the Supreme Court even look at this? If the lower courts are saying that Kurtzing is lost on this because of the way the first sale doctrine is, I would think the Supreme Court might not want an absurd result to happen. I know a lot of people think that law is about absurdity, but the thing about – I'm not talking about like the DMCA exceptions. I'm not talking about the things that are done by bureaucrats. I'm talking about the courts. Now, courts really despise messing with long precedents that have been set. It's like stare decisis. It's one of these legal terms you learn in school. If there's been a doctrine that's been set up, like the first sale doctrine, if that's been established for the longest time, the Supreme Court is likely just to go, okay, wait, we've done this before. We're not gonna upset the law just yet. So I'm hoping that in theory, the Supreme Court finds this to be an absurd result whereby it would stop sales of things that are made outside the United States. Because at this point, a lot of things are outsourced outside the United States. It would create this very odd loophole in the first sale doctrine. So I would think the Supreme Court would look differently at this. And the reason why the Supreme Court didn't take on the, I think it's the Omega case, they're the watch company, was because one of the judges had actually worked for Omega or had been pro-Omega.
They ruled 4-4, and Elena Kagan had to recuse herself.
Exactly.
You're right, I forgot about that.
That kind of shows a bit of, it shows where the Supreme Court's kind of thinking on this, that they're not really sure what's going on. But that's a very particular kind of case, different set of facts. So I'm kind of curious what's going to happen with this. Although, I got to say, if for some reason this is a broad opinion and they say, sure, you can do this, I mean, I would hope that the free market would try to correct that. But then I was thinking about this. Free market doesn't correct any of our craziness because, like, we give away our right to do courts. We can't sue our companies like Sony or something because we signed into their little EULA. You know, we give up our we have to sign into arbitration.
Well, so what are you saying? That they should just put a EULA on everything saying you don't have the right? I mean, that's what this case is about, saying you can't make that happen.
Oh, no, I'm just saying that I'm afraid that even if there's a broad opinion, I was hoping that maybe the free market would go, no, this is crazy. We can't let this happen. Mm. But we kind of let it happen with cell phones all the time. What is it like on this?
So you've lost faith in the free market.
I'm hoping that the free market can correct it. Yes, thanks for saying that.
No, because I don't want people to think that's the case. I do think that I do believe that they should rule that you have a first sale right, whether it's made overseas or not. What's the difference? I think possibly a strict ruling about sort of like the Kazaa case where they had an inducement ruling saying like, no, we're not going to make file sharing illegal, but we're going to make a certain kind of file sharing illegal. I could see the court doing that.
Yes.
And saying if at a certain scale, specifically for commercial, for a large scale commercial benefit in a way that would undermine a corporation in this way, then we'll call that illegal. And that's what you're talking about, is not ruling broadly.
Well, then we get into a situation where are we just going to see overseas prices climb up? Because if first sale is, you know, we'll see how this court case plays out. But if first sale is deemed to be relevant, whether it's a good that is manufactured in the U.S. or abroad, and companies will say, okay, well, if Kurtzing or Sara Lane or whoever buys a bunch of textbooks overseas, buys a bunch of anything, right, brings back to the U.S. and then resells it for profit for them, but definitely undermining the cost of what it would have been in the U.S., well, we just have to make those prices higher at the offset.
Yeah, and that's the free market at work, in my opinion. If somebody has figured out how to take the books that you make and sell in a certain part of the world and bring them to another part of the world and resell them in a way that's more efficient than you, then they're exploiting an inefficiency in your system. And you have been exploiting an inefficiency in the system that they have now been able to circumvent. Back in the days before you were able to cheaply ship a textbook from one part of the world to another or find the information about prices before the internet, there was an inefficiency there that allowed you to charge more in different places. I fundamentally see this as the same thing about regioning in movies. We have a different world. And that natural barrier that allowed you to release a movie in different parts of the world at different times has gone away. Same thing here. That natural barrier that allowed you to release and charge different amounts of different parts of the world has gone away. Are you going to be able to charge different amounts in different parts of the world? Yes, but will it be as perfectly separated as it was in the past? No, it won't. And I hope that the Supreme Court rules with that in mind in whatever ruling they make here. Let's take a break and thank our sponsor, American Express Bank, FSB. You should be saving some money up. Hopefully you're saving for something fun, maybe a car, or maybe you're saving for a new home, or maybe you're just, you know what, waiting for an emergency, making sure you're not taken advantage of in another economic downturn. Whatever your goals are for saving, here's a good place to put your money. An American Express Personal Savings High Yield Savings Account gives you competitive variable interest rates to help you reach your savings goals, and you can easily link the account to your existing bank accounts without switching banks. It's a great complement to your existing financial tools, and it's FDIC insured. So take control of your finances today. Learn more about the American Express Personal Savings High Yield Savings Account at personalsavings.com/online savings. And while you're there, open an account. Remember, there's no minimums, there's no fees, and there's no need to switch your bank. You don't have to be like, oh, I don't want to leave my bank. Get started today with an American Express Personal Savings. Help you reach your savings goals by opening a high-yield savings account offered by American Express Bank, FSB. That's the high-yield savings account at personalsavings.com/online savings, member FDIC. And we thank American Express Bank, FSB, for their support of Tech News Today. All right, we got a lot to rip through here. First of all, Amazon... I'm looking at the wrong day. first of all, Amazon is not in the news, but Google is. Now, Google... was supposed to have an announcement this morning at 7 a.m., but they did not because of the hurricane, as we mentioned in the news fuse. However, we know almost everything about the Nexus 7 because it was on Office Depot shelves. It's been leaked all over the place. And I noticed during the show here that Google has actually just gone ahead and given in and saying, yes, the Nexus 7 32 gig plus mobile tablet will be available November 13th for $299 unlocked. What does that mean? It means you got a data plan in there. So you don't have to sign up for a contract, but you still get it for $299. It's called the Nexus 7. It comes with an HSPA Plus radio. $299 is a $50 premium over the 16 gig model, which will be $249. Available unlocked, but Google will sell with either a T-Mobile or AT&T SIM pre-installed. And then you have to take it to the carrier and get your service set up. You can do it under a mobile sharing plan, something like that. The Nexus 7 will not come with an LTE option. And we're hearing that that's going to be the same for the Nexus 4, which is that LG phone that is rumored to be announced as well. 1280 by 800 IPS display. Okay.
It's oh, now. Sorry.
1280 by 800 IPS display, NVIDIA Tegra 3 processor, and 1.2 megapixel front-facing camera, and will ship with Android 4.2 out of the box. And as I mentioned, November 13th. And as Jason just pointed out, the LG Nexus 4 also announced and will get 4.2. You want to tell us about it?
Yeah, I mean, this is just really the specs on this device just have not changed from what we've seen in the rumor mill. Although the thing to point out, though, is that it was looking here. Let me switch away. I forgot that I was talking. The rumor was that it was going to be short on space, 8 gigs, somewhere around there. And it was kind of going back and forth whether that was going to be how it was going to land. It looks like it is $299 for 8 gigs of storage, $349 for the 16 gig version. A T-Mobile version of that's going to sell unlocked for around $199 on a two-year contract. But yeah, it looks like a pretty decent Nexus follow-up. I'll be curious to see how LG does in the Nexus space with the phone.
And there's the news on Android 4.2. It's a new flavor of jelly bean. It's not key lime pie after all, and it's going to have Miracast built in. So you could be able to send your audio and video to devices that support that. That's an interesting idea because I know with my Nexus, I was like, what do I do with this? I can't get my video off of it without a Google TV. So this is really pretty cool. There's also gesture typing. So if you would like, if Swipe wasn't happy about the change of Swift
totally,
key,
totally.
It's built into Android 4.2. So you could do the little swiping around or whatever they're going to call it, gesture dragging your finger thing.
Nexus 10 also out, 2560 by 1600 resolution, 300 pixels per inch, true RGB, real stripe PLS. Coming in 16 gig or 32 gig variants will be Wi-Fi only. ARM Cortex A15 chip, Paired with 2 gigabytes of RAM, probably an Exynos, looks like, and combined with that Android 4.2 that we were just talking about. 5 megapixel camera on the back, 1.9 megapixel front. The front-facing camera is never that good anyway. 9,000 milliamp hour capacity. They think it'll be good for 9 hours. 604 grams of weight. Can anybody do the conversion quickly in their head?
Wait, somebody ask Google.
Right. That, yeah.
Google now that.
1610 aspect ratio. So a nice looking tablet. And what's interesting to me as well, Google just going ahead and saying, you know what? We're not going to fight these leaks anymore. We're just going to make the announcements that we would have made today, probably because they have supply chain things like that Office Depot display already in the works. And it would be so much harder to figure out how to stop them than to just go ahead and make the announcements. Good on you, Google.
Absolutely.
You are going to get as many people talking about this today because there's a lack of other news in the wake of the hurricane as you would have if you'd done the announcement. And we don't have to sit there and make fun of you.
Totally. The second I saw this, I was like, thank you. I don't have to have another All About Android show where we talk about rumors again, even though there was supposed to be an announcement. No, it was a great move on Google's part to just go ahead and do this. People are going to be as excited about this stuff as they would have with an event. Maybe an event wasn't so necessary.
Nexus 10 is at 1.3 pounds, according to Google. That's their conversion. And there's The Verge is saying this is one of the best-built tablets that they've held, which I'm really...
Where did they hold it? They got briefed.
I'm assuming that there was a bunch of NDAs, and Google couldn't stop that either, because I'm sure a bunch of journalists signed on to that. But, I mean, I've played with some of those Samsung Notes, like the 10.1. That thing felt chintzy. So I'm really hoping this 10 is fantastic, because that was one of the complaints I had when I got to use those devices.
Yeah, and just one other quick kind of note as far as 4.2 Jelly Bean is concerned. Photosphere, which had been in the rumor mill, it's 360-degree panorama, basically. And then Google Now, they've increased support for things like flight info, reservations at restaurants, hotel confirmations, shipping details.
Excellent. Good stuff. And thank you, Jason and I, specifically for keeping on top of that and making sure we saw those announcements. A couple more stories to get to. Ayaz, you've been following this Amazon front page spat.
Yes.
We talked about it in the news fuse.
Right. So on the front page of Amazon is a direct comparison, a big ad for the Kindle Fire HD. It's got a Gizmodo quote, "You're 7.9-inch tablet has far fewer pixels than the competing 7-inch tablets. You're cramming a worse screen in there, charging more, and accusing others of compromise? Ballsy." So that's actually the text above the ad. And then it
says ballsy?
It does say that. Wow. If you scroll up, it's there. And the thing is, it shows the areas where the Kindle Fire HD outshines the Apple iPad. Obviously, the price and the fact that it's got 2 speakers and it's got a higher pixel density. And the unofficial Apple weblog had a field day with this because they're like, well, there are things that Apple does better. It's got you don't have to pay more to get no ads. So you get no ads on that. You get 64 gigabytes potentially, LTE variants, 250,000 apps. So for the longest time on this show, we have had this weird line on the Kindle Fire. Is it a real tablet or not? The thing is, can you compare it directly to the iPad? And now there is a direct comparison. We got the Fire HD versus the Mini. Spec for spec, what's the better tablet?
Nate, what do you think?
I really like the Fire HD. I've got one. I think it looks interesting. But it strikes me that they are two very different devices, actually. Like, I think that the key here is kind of in how they're being marketed. Like, they're both sort of 7-inch devices. But one of them really is just geared towards using, media from Amazon, whereas the iPad sort of feels more about, productivity and games and reading and stuff like that. And I don't know if we're comparing apples to apples to sort of use a highly ironic expression. But I don't know. I mean, I think, the price speaks for itself. One is significantly cheaper than the other one. It's kind of hard to disagree with that. I don't know. I'm looking forward to seeing how this plays out.
Well, Sarah, you were bummed that the iPad mini didn't have a high-res display, or a retina display. What do you think of these outward comparisons?
Yeah, you're right. I was. I really wanted it to have retina because I never feel like going backwards is the right thing, especially because I'm so used to the retina. I don't have a mini yet, obviously. I have got an LTE on order, so who knows when I'm going to get mine, hopefully by the end of November. But I'm going to be really interested to see if it bothers me that much. And Amazon has a point. I mean, it's not as if they're making this stuff up. It just depends on what, as a consumer, you're looking for. To me, the iPad, you know, I always say this, the iOS ecosystem, it's so broad, the Mini misses out on none of that. Yes, some things are not going to look as nice on a Retina display. I'm not even convinced that all apps will be truly noticeable because of, again, you've got a smaller screen. That remains to be seen. But the iPad mini is the iPad. It's just a little bit smaller. So when you say, well, the Kindle Fire HD is, you know, better resolution and it's cheaper and how could you possibly go with a mini? I agree with Nate. It's like we're still not comparing two 7-inch tablets that are equal in all ways besides the resolution and the price. They're two different things. I'm very, I love the fact that we see ballsy on Amazon's front page and that they decide to use a Gizmodo quote. So it's not as if Amazon's really saying that. But yeah, this is playing dirty. This is the time of year for this sort of stuff. And it's kind of funny that Amazon will eventually be selling the iPad mini, one assumes.
Or will they now?
Well, or will they? I mean, I think that's it's usually the way that it goes. But for now, they'd like as few minis to be sold as possible by making us feel stupid.
All right, let's finish up real quickly with those rumors over the weekend that Microsoft was going to possibly acquire Netflix.
That's pretty much the entire rumor. I don't even know how we missed this. Netflix stock did really well on Friday on those rumors. Shares jumped by more than 13%. And Forbes was saying that the rumor stems from the recent announcement that Reed Hastings is stepping down from the Microsoft's board of directors. And the thing is, you know, if Microsoft was thinking about buying Netflix, why would Reed have to sit there? Because clearly he would have a stake in this, although he could just recuse himself or he could just have left for other reasons. Netflix's market capitalization, $3.7 billion. Microsoft has around $70 billion sitting around in cash. So they could buy Netflix for twice the value of it if they wanted to and still have a ton of money left over. Let's ask Alex, you're here. Microsoft, what would Microsoft do to Netflix, assuming that...
I think Alex is deep into Windows research right now.
Well, what was your question?
What would Microsoft do to Netflix if they bought it? Would they just strip it out? Would it just still exist?
Well, they could integrate it with their Xbox video thing that's coming in, and which has streaming video in it already, but they could just kind of integrate the libraries together maybe, or the content. I don't know.
You know, I saw this on Friday, and I was like, this is just ridiculous rumor. It almost feels like stock pumping. I'm not saying it is, but I just don't see Microsoft purchasing Netflix. Not that it's entirely impossible, but Netflix looking for a buyer? Is this something that they need? And Microsoft's certainly not out looking for a purchase like this. I guess maybe they would like something to beef up their Xbox video. So in that case, it would make sense. But it just doesn't seem like there's a lot to this.
Can I just say, I think it would be absolutely brilliant if Microsoft bought Netflix. I mean, I think firstly, they'd rename it something like, you know, Windows Live Flix, for one thing.
Actually,
I think they could do a lot with this. I mean, if you think about it, the Xbox is really just becoming, you know, more about media and home entertainment than it is just about games. And I think, you know, shoving in a service like Netflix would actually make a lot of sense. I mean, at the moment, all the stuff on there, it's so fragmented and it's all from different providers. And I think that, you know, particularly with the library that the Netflix US one has, because it's very different to the one that we have here in the UK for Netflix, you know, they could really offer something, I think, quite compelling if they tied it in with, like, you know, you buy Xbox Gold and you get Windows Live Netflix on demand, whatever, as part of that. I think that would be brilliant.
Windows Live Xbox video service brought to you by Netflix.
Netflix. Powered by Netflix.
Yeah,
there you go.
There's already
Have it on the phones, have it on Windows Phone, have it on Windows 8. Yeah, I could see that being quite compelling, actually.
I mean, someone in the chat room said it's kind of like Skype, or that Microsoft didn't do much with Skype. They just kind of kept it the same and just sort of integrating it into the products. I mean, it could be something like that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, that's already $8 a month. Why not? Windows 8, $8 a month for Netflix. It's just all the 8s are aligning.
8s for everyone.
All right, let's move on to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
Steve Jobs famously had designed a yacht. It was described in the Walter Isaacson book, and apparently the yacht is done. French designer Philippe Starck revealed it. 9to5Mac had one of the stories we saw of it, and it definitely looks like an Apple yacht. It's just got that sleek design, those tall windows. Sarah, you like the yacht?
I love the yacht. I wouldn't call myself a yacht person. This is probably a little too expensive for me to take out for the day. But yeah, I love it. It's beautiful. It's like a it's like a big Mac Mini, but that really sort of defeats the purpose of the Mini. It's like a
there'll be a smaller yacht soon called the Yacht Mini.
Yeah. Well, it's going to have lower visibility. Yeah. So you might want to go with a
Are
Kindle
those
Fire
retina
yacht.
Windows there? I'm not certain.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, it's beautiful. How do we come aboard?
Yeah, where is it? It's somewhere in Europe, Nate. You're going to go take a jump over there and ride the yacht?
It doesn't strike. I mean, I think it's a beautiful looking piece of kit, but it doesn't look like an Apple product. If Johnny Ive designed it, I think it would just look like one, you know, single flat white slab, you know, that just cruises down. It's not symmetrical. You know, it's got all things piled up at the back instead of at the front. It's, you know, it's gorgeous though. I want one.
And yet he wants one. All right, this episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Gazelle. If you want a new yacht, you're going to have to sell a lot of gadgets. So you better get started right now. A more achievable goal might be a new Lumia 920 or maybe an iPhone or maybe one of those Nexus 10s, Nexus 7s. Any gadget you want, though, you might want to get rid of some of your old gadgets. And one of the simplest ways to get cash quick for them is to sell them on Gazelle. You just go and you say, I've got that iPad third generation. I've got AT&T. Give me an offer. You lock it in for 30 days. You got 30 days to think about it, risk-free. You don't even have to sell it. But lock it in now, because the sooner you lock in that offer, the higher the offer is likely to be, because stuff doesn't get more valuable over time. So go to gazelle.com, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Lock in that offer today. And when you're ready, they'll ship it for free. They'll give you a shipping label. You print it out. You send it to them for free. As soon as they get it, they turn it around in a couple of days, pay you by PayPal or by check. Find out what your iPhone is worth. Take a minute. Go to gazelle.com and find out. Sell your used phone today at gazelle.com. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. And so thank them for their support of Tech News Today as well. What's on the calendar, Sarah?
Tom, I'm glad you asked. Remember about 3 months ago, we heard about Freedom Pop, which was going to begin shipping WiMAX iPod Touch cases. Basically, turn your iPod Touch into something that has WiMAX. It's going to be available now, $99. Although they're shipping, it's only for third and fourth gen iPod Touches. So keep that in mind. As Apple keeps innovating, Freedom Pop's going to have to keep catching up. EA, Electronic Arts' earnings is tomorrow, October 30th. The Sony PS3 slimmer $300 model with the 500 gigabyte drive and a copy of Assassin's Creed 3 is going to be available starting tomorrow. Also starting tomorrow is Build 2012. That's in Redmond, Washington. Very Windows tile-like website there. It's very pretty. And finally, Verizon has officially announced the Nokia Lumia 822. It's coming this fall, but that's all we know. We don't have pricing information as of yet.
All right, let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
Got one voicemail to get to before we wrap up. And Linda has an answer to the email that we read on Friday about the Fusion Drive from Apple.
Hi there. This is Linda from San Jose. In the interest of accuracy, I thought you might want to know that there are a couple of differences between Apple's Fusion Drive and Intel's implementation that your caller Jason mentioned on the show this past Friday. One of those differences is that the Apple implementation uses file copying and not block copying. And the second one is that Apple's implementation does not use caching, and Intel's does. Apple's implementation uses auto-tiering, as described by Ars Technica. The Ars article is by Tim Hutchinson, in case you want to check it out. Also, I really do appreciate that you attempt to be even-handed, and you do, in my view, succeed most of the time. Thanks for the great work.
Thanks, Linda.
Bye.
Awesome explanation of that, and appreciate the call. That was
a lot of feedback about that, so thank you, Linda, for having the nicest response.
All right, that's it for this episode of Tech News Today. Thank you, folks, for submitting stories on our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. Nate Langston, thank you for joining us. I know you got to get off to that Windows Phone announcement, because we are bending time and space. If you're watching on demand, Nate has already been at the Windows Phone announcement, and yet he still has yet to go, because he is a time traveler.
That is one of my characteristics, is I can bend space and time at my will. Yes, no, I'm going to head out there and I'll probably be tweeting a bunch of stuff. That I know they're going to have hands-on with a load of new devices. So I'm on Twitter at Nate Langson, NateLanxon. And we're also coming up, I just wanted to say, we're about to have our 100th episode of the Wired.co.uk podcast, which we're going to do live. So please do check that out. It's on November 8th. You'll see it in my Twitter feed. That's probably the best way to.
That's fantastic. Congratulations. I feel like you just launched that podcast. You're already at 100 episodes. That's awesome.
It was 2 years ago, but we're going to do it. We're going to do it live. We're having a little party and with some beer and friends and things like that. So yeah, 100 episodes, kind of amazing. We did one live just, last week actually with, David Karp, Tumblr CEO, we had a conference last week. So if you're interested in Tumblr, go and check that out. That's already live.
Excellent. Congratulations on that 100th episode. And you can find all the good stuff at wired.co.uk. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll be back tomorrow with Rafe Needleman as our guest. See you then.